All right. First of all, a wonderful afternoon. How's day two of Ignite? So I'm sure you guys have your 30,000 steps in for today, right? You're winning, right? Hashtag winning. But anyway, thank you for being here. My name is Dux Raymond Tsai. I serve as the CTO of AppPoint, and it's a privilege for me today to share the stage with Charles. And certainly Charles, we'll discuss and talk about what they've done at NBC Universal. We have the privilege of working with them. It's been an amazing journey, and it's still a journey. But the beautiful thing is we'll learn about what it took for NBC Universal to stand up SharePoint as an enterprise service across multiple organizations. Who's thinking about doing that, by the way?
There you go. Okay.
Awesome.
Charles? Who in here are executives or decision makers for their company? And so everyone else is a technical person of some sort? Okay. That's going to become relevant in a few minutes, but go
All
ahead.
Right. So to get going, so Charles, maybe why don't we quickly tell everybody who NBC is?
What are you doing to me right now?
Hashtag duh, winning.
Hashtag swish.
Life is full of lovely little irony.
Ghost too. Mr. Robot.
We keep it real. We keep it fresh.
Earned our position.
Boom. Woohoo.
Nice.
Wow. Now we're having fun.
Now we're not big on rules.
It's up to you, really.
But you gotta trust me.
Do what you gotta do.
I'm stepping up.
I'm just here for the potential injuries.
We're just a stampede of horses that just can't be stopped.
Oh my God!
Please tell me you know what's going on.
It's just the beginning.
Get back!
Remember, if something chases you,
run. We are not a normal family.
I understand what it's like to be different. I'm very different.
Do magic and stop it!
Our art is a reflection of our reality.
Here's how we're finishing the day, only adding a couple of points.
We haven't seen a news day this busy in a long time.
This is Telemundo.
Let's play hardball.
Wow.
Big change comes through little steps.
What would be the Clinton plan?
If it's Sunday, it's Meet the Press.
NBC4 will continue to follow this story.
This is big for you. This is big.
How great is this?
What you got? Now I'm paying attention.
And you're here. You can't beat it.
We are going to have some amazing sights and sounds for you.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Brady throws. Caught.
You have to be kidding me.
American Barrels won.
Down to the finish line.
Boy, does he deliver.
New world record.
Really, all I wanted was to be part of an Olympic montage, and I think I've earned my spot.
Welcome to the family.
Ooh. There you go. What?
No. I
know. Now you can fill out the evaluation. And
yeah, now. That's it. Show's over.
All right.
Now, I know there's at least five people that watched our content, because I know there's at least two more NBC and a Comcast over there, so I'm good. We're representing today. But NBC, as a media and entertainment company, obviously we have a lot of content, we have a lot of channels, we have a lot of companies like Dux mentioned before, and they all use different variations, potentially, of sharing information or collaborating, as we know. But like the slide says, we're one of the world's leading media and entertainment companies. And I'm very proud to be an employee of the company. So I really do want to appreciate, I really appreciate you guys coming out to hear about my journey. Doc said it right, it's a journey that is definitely not complete. And as you guys, I'm sure, are on your own journeys, you'll hear about, you know, lessons learned. Let's see. Okay, so in our company, everyone has a voice. News has a different voice from Parks. Parks has a different voice from corporate finance. And everyone does things differently, meaning what they collaborate on, what they share information with, and how they do it. And frankly, what's important to them as a data type, whether it's a invoice or business engagement contract or whatever the case may be. But what we realize that everyone in the company from a unified perspective needs access to anything, anywhere. And we're finding that to be, as we go on in this digital transformation as an industry, we find that more and more prevalent. So And then the last point there, and I want to stay on that for just a second, is everyone is a contributor. So from the project managers, from the executive, from the field operators, from the producers in Turkey, from the analysts that are sitting in the war zone, Syria, everyone contributes content to the global, our global footprint. So it's important that information is accessible globally as a company. But reality is, this is what our footprint looks like at NBC as far as collaboration tools. This is actually not even updated because there's a couple more tools on here we've onboarded that just needed to be done based on the business. And this isn't necessarily a bad story. I mean, this you actually probably have a much cleaner view of your collaboration space, right? Because I'm the only one that has something like this, right? This, yeah. But what we're looking to do is we're not looking necessarily to just eliminate. I mean, the false sense that people want to deliver to themselves, I would say themselves, is that we can rationalize this down to just two. The reality is that's not true. You're not going to be able to rationalize down to two. You shouldn't even try. And we'll talk about the reason how you go about rationalizing, why you rationalize, and what's the purpose. And I asked the question about who's a strategic decision maker and who's a admin, and it's important. I'll get to that in a second. So, Dux, why don't you come up and talk about, and you've been helping us talk about the four steps
as sure.
collaboration
so, service. So one of the things as we start working with Charles is, you know, I'm sure a lot of you are thinking about this. This is daunting. This is big. For some of you, similar size organization like Charles or even smaller that Dux, you know, we just acquired that company, have different departments, have their little SharePoint fiefdoms going on, and we want to consolidate, but where do I start? So we've simmered down what we did with NBC Universal into these four steps, right? And we'll go through these. First is really the idea of establishing a collaboration, all-up collaboration roadmap. And Charles will spend a lot of time talking about that. How do they rationalize it? What kind of business justification do they put forth? How did they decide, like, what are we going to keep? What are we going to get rid of? And in the end, what did the roadmap look like? So we'll talk about that. Second is once the roadmap is there, we're ready to execute. Now, as we execute, we'll get into some of the technical details, but one of the key area that's very important. I know a lot of you already know this, but then the challenge is how do we do it again? How do we ensure platform governance? Now, when we talk about platform governance, we're not just talking about SharePoint governance. That's part of it, but when we talk about platform governance, how do we govern data? How do we ensure that if we go to, for example, a hybrid environment, which NBC Universal is heading towards to, ensure that what gets in the cloud are things that are not going to be compromised, right? So we'll talk about that. The third step is once we have our platform governance in place, we're ready to move. What does moving look like? How do we facilitate a realistic, compliant migration process? Is it just moving stuff from point A to point B? I wish it was that simple.
No.
But the reality is it's not, right? And then lastly, how do we consistently drive sustainable adoption from the executive C-suite down to the day-to-day business workers? And we know it's different, right? The lawyers writing contracts for the next movie would have a different business need versus project managers in IT. So we'll walk through this four steps, and I think just having this framework kind of helps you set up your journey as well. So Charles, why don't we talk about the first step?
So establishing the roadmap. There was really the vision was around a connected workplace, or AKA called a digital workplace. And the point around this for us is to do four basic, focus around four basic pillars. Simplify the tech stack, that glob of tools that none of you guys have. Delight our users. The user experience is very important to us because that's the one thing that we hear in our IT group is, why is it so complicated to share information? Why is it so complicated to do blah, blah, blah? Enterprise search was huge for us because we have so much content and we can't find it when we need to find it. And that's kind of defeats the purposes of having all these tools and these capabilities if you don't actually if you're not able to actually search it. And the last one, which Dux just talked on, is the governance. So once you've got it, and governance, does, by the way, governance is not policy. Governance is not policy. Governance is defining how you make decisions on the data that you have. Once you define that and framework that, that's what governance is. So we talked about the technology stack. We talked about, look, we want to focus in on maybe not one, but maybe the baseline being Microsoft. We want to talk about delighting the users, the user experience, simplify instead of having to jump through multiple different tools. Maybe have one or two, but definitely some integrations, some transparent integrations if we can establish that. The enterprise search, I beat up on. I don't want to talk more about that because that'll get down to the weeds that you guys, our tech guys in the room, will beat me up on because I'm not a super tech guy. And then the platform governance, we will get into that in much more detail. So one of the things that helped us start this journey, I didn't just think this out of my head, and I didn't talk to my enterprise architect and say, hey, what do we do? We actually used some of Gartner's best practices around enterprise content management. So you've got to conduct an analysis of your data. You've got to do the right sizing. You've got to do the discovery. You've got to do the governance. You've got to do the buy-ins from all the different facilities. But first, you've got to do a lot of definition. So we didn't do this to stand us up on our own. It's really the point around this. This will be available, right? The name is available?
Sure.
So I don't want to read through all this, but just letting you know that it wasn't Charles. It was actually based on some industry-leading practices.
And one thing I want to add on, sure. Who among you subscribe to Gartner in your organization? You can easily get this. And for those that don't have this, you can certainly purchase just this report. But it's a great report where it's not just academic. Gartner actually did a lot of research work with organizations like NBC Universal to come up with a list of recommendations, not only for the traditional ECM, for enterprise collab, but one of the big areas of focus today in most organizations is the concept of EIM, Enterprise Information Management, which we'll definitely touch on as well.
Yeah, and in particular for those who do have Gartner, if you search up the initiative, Digital Workplace, you'll find a lot of that information there. So just search on Digital Workplace and you'll find it. So this is an example, actually a practical example of what we did with our application. This is a list of some of our applications that we went through and did analysis on, whether we tolerate it, whether we invest in it, whether we eliminate it, whether we just keep it. So what we did, and what you see here on the screen is some color coding and some numbering. And what it really means is one green, simplified, is it does that feature, whether it be team collaboration, internal, external, or project management, it does that feature natively, and it does it without any help or support or integration. So then five red is it needs all types of help. It doesn't do that function at all. So in this example, we'll jump down to project server. So it does team collaboration, but it doesn't do team collaboration necessarily externally without a little bit of help around governance. So we've gone through a couple of iterations. So this is just really a snapshot. We've got, this list is pretty long. You guys saw all the tools I had on the previous page. But we painstakingly went through and interviewed the tool owners, because I don't own all these tools. We interviewed the business owners, that some of these are business owner applications, and talked about what they actually use these tools for. So in your journey, as you discover these tools in your environment, that is the one question you first ask. What do you use this for? Because they'll say it's a collaboration tool, but they're really only using it for file sharing. Or they'll say it's a project management tool, and they're really using it for instant messaging. So this is just an example of something you can do. And this is actually based off a Gartner template that we kind of customized for ourselves. If you want any more questions about how we did this, we can talk after the session. Scenario-focused engineering. This is actually incredibly important because for those of you who are techie folks and admins, I mean techie folks sound like you guys are carny. I don't mean to sound like that. But the technicians in the house, I may offend you right now, is that it doesn't start with you. It's not about you. It is really about that user. It is really about what they want, what they need, and their experiences. We'll talk through a couple of user scenarios in a little bit. But it's really looking at how does your information management, knowledge management, collaboration, whatever you want to call it, how does it enable the business to be better at doing what they do? So for us, how do we enable a TV producer to do his job or her job better? How do we help, again, that field reporter that's in Turkey deliver his information to the nightly news producer more effectively? So it's really about that business enablement that makes it important. And for whatever your business line is, that's what your consideration is as you look through your information management tool portfolio.
And one thing I'd like to add, right? I know a lot of you have heard this already in a lot of the sessions. Yeah, business first, technical later, business first, technical later. But especially for NBC Universal, I mean, just think about the recent Olympics, right?
Right.
NBC, the team, the Olympic team, SharePoint was a very, very important technology for them, because on behind the scenes, all the collaboration with the NBC Olympics team was done through SharePoint. And in fact, one of the key architects of that is Dan Holm. He's the product manager for SharePoint. But that's how mission critical it is. And you know, a lot of money's at stake, right? If something goes wrong, information doesn't land on the right time, the right person. You talk about real-time scoring and all that. So this is why it's important that you think about the business first.
Absolutely. Thinking for innovation, and the one problem we had as a company years ago was that it was NBC US, and then it was the international business. And that was an error on our part. We're an international company. You have to think globally. You have to think innovative. So the hybrid model for us is where we're going, because we've got businesses in Germany that have data locality problems that we can't pull data out there, but we need to communicate with those businesses, those services. So that's important to us. We've got two guys in South Africa that need to use SharePoint services. How do we create that kind of environment that those users can actually benefit from our services? So we had to think about that, and what does that mean? And having SharePoint on-prem, for us, that doesn't work. So we need to have SharePoint hybrid cloud that allows us to expand those capabilities. Renovation, this goes to the simplification, is you cannot survive by continuing to add on new products. As much as the business wants these new cool tools, the question you have to ask your business is, what exactly do you want to do? You hear me say that quite a bit. What is you trying to do? If I can't do it today, sure, go off and do that. However, I'm going to reel you back in once my platform, my collaboration, my connected workplace platform comes up and matures. So that's more of the evolutionary state. And then risk and governance, which I'm sure that would beat everyone on top of the head with all day long, is the fourth pillar that we're focusing on.
Is this Slack cool, though? Can I use Slack? Or
you can, it's cool. You can use Slack if you want to pay for yourself.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, the other key area, if you want to just open everything up.
Yeah, Charles, I got you.
So the other key area, you know, working with Charles and the NBC Universal team is, well, certainly when you think about roadmap, right? Yeah, we got to rationalize our platform, but equally as important, you got to think about what's your strategy around information lifecycle management. Today, while you may argue storage is cheap, it is cheap, right? But then more information is being generated now. The question becomes, how can I mine my assets? And I want to talk about this because it's very important. Back in the day, business critical information sits in what we call structured environment. I mean, think about this. 20 years ago, anything that's business critical will be in like SAP, right? Or any line of business system. But today, you would have to agree with me, a lot of business critical information goes through unstructured data channels, right? How often do you email stuff? How often do people collaborate on SharePoint that essentially it's holding together a $10 million project? Y'all with me? What's the problem? Do you know what's in there? If I walk into your organization, I run a search in your intranet, and I go, I'm going to search the keyword performance evaluation, enter. I'm going to search my social security number. Will I find it? I hope not. I get a lot of those conversations in DC. I live and work in DC, right? Government, that's top of mind these days. So one of the key areas is you put your roadmap together around your collaboration. Think about how you're going to address your information management strategy as well. So I want to share four very pragmatic approaches, and we'll go through this. The first step, if you think about putting together an information management approach, is number one is you got to know what you have. And when I say you got to know what you have, obviously SharePoint is in there, file share, whatever, because it's very, very important, especially as you move to a hybrid environment, a new environment, is the ability to understand what I have, okay? Now I know what I have. Number two, what do I need to protect? Y'all with me? Y'all familiar with the concept controlled workloads? Okay, so in data privacy, there's this concept called controlled workloads. Controlled workloads are data that you need to protect. Because the reality is, you can't protect everything, right? So now that I know everything I have, what do I need to protect? Next, what do I need to get rid of? I've been trying, ducks. Storage is cheap. Everybody wants to keep files from 1982. Well, wait till you get subpoenaed. What's a standard retention policy these days? 7 years for Sarbanes-Oxley, 5 years. Yeah, 3 to 5. Yeah. So these days,
I work in the medical industry for a while. The retention period, forever for them. financials and healthcare forever.
But then there's this balance, right? Well, after that, I'm just going to get rid of it because if I get subpoenaed, I'm done for whatever reason. So you understand what you have. You understand, you got to analyze what's important, what you need to protect, what you need to cleanse, get rid of, which we'll go through examples in a second. And then the second step is, once you understand what you have, you had a grip of the information you want to protect and keep. Number two, moving forward, how do you organize these information? You know, we have policies, right? I'm sure you do. Everybody loves to create their term store, their content types, their classification scheme. And we tell users, when you upload, make sure you put this metadata in there. Do they do it? No. So what do you do next? You make it required. And they keep hitting save where it says, I can't save it. You got to fill in these properties. Do they do it? No. They send an email attachment. Right? But we know why that's important, right? So how do we do that effectively that we can still tag, classify, and move it in a compliant way? And then third, once you're in your new environment, like what NBC Universal is in their new hybrid environment, how do we continuously enforce and make sure that people are using it the right way? And listen, this is important. How do we make easy for people to do the right thing? You know, I'm done with telling people, for the 20th time, upload that document, copy the link, pop in the email, and hit send. Don't send attachment. It's too much work. I give up, right? The beauty, for example, Office 365 and integrations with 2016, that whole process is easier. And then lastly, what about going back to retention, any type of regulation you have to address with? Let's say you're working on a project that you're bounded by the Sarbanes-Oxley compliance. What does it say? Any financial-related information? 7 years, right? How do you handle that? Like today, once your project is done, what happens to your project sites?
FISTA forever, right?
Bless your heart. You know, on a side note, I used to live here in Atlanta. When I first moved here, people started saying, bless your heart. I thought, people are so kind and nice. But you know, it's an excuse to be mean, right? That kid's ugly. Bless his heart.
So I want to stay on this slide for a second. I want to bring it relevant because I've shown this slide to executives in my company, and they always kind of look at me like, what does this mean to me? And I'm talking about a film executive, non-IT person. And what I made them realize is that nowadays, the data about the things we create in our company is more important than the thing itself. Right? And they looked at me like I was crazy. I'm like, think about it. So the data around the metrics of the movies we create, the content we create, the ratings, the viewership, the what types of movie, all that data drives what we invest in tomorrow. So the movie is great, and it makes money. It's going to do that. That's what we're in business for. But to help us get evolved and get more profitable, it's the data behind what we deliver, the data behind the thing. So understanding information management was important, and they didn't realize it because they just thought, make content and
sell
it, and it comes out, not realizing that part of the day-to-day, they're ingesting large amounts of data, and we've got to protect that.
As an example, for a movie studio I'm not going to name, and it's not you guys, what happened when their movie was leaked, right? How much money did that cost?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right, good.
So Doug talked about roadmap, and I'm not going to go into the very detailed roadmap that we have, but I will give you guys an example of what we have. So we essentially looked at four or five different layers, the fifth layer being more like the Euphoria, Garden of Eden.
Utopia, Euphoria.
Utopia, same thing. Yeah, you know what I mean.
You get your high, right?
It's the end state that you're high, right?
Yeah.
We started it with replatforming. We had some disparate old systems. We had, keep me honest, was it SharePoint 2003? I'm sorry. So we have 2003 all the way to 2013. And I'm pointing to Amitad in the front because he's my SharePoint administrator, so he'll keep me honest today. So we decided, first, let's replatform what we have. Let's discover what we have. Let's get our base right. Once we did that, we had, I don't know, maybe 50 or so site collections that were on disparate machines and some out in the DMZ and some internally. So we went through an effort to consolidate and migrate those onto the new platform. Once we get past that, and we're kind of right here in this section right now, we're establishing a more enterprise class meaning automation, process, defined services within those automated service offerings. And that's where we're kind of sitting right now. That's where we're in the journey. And the next is to get to expand it out, to collapse those things, utilize AppPoint, actually some of my AppPoint solutions that Duxford will go on a little bit later. And then this, the second row is kind of like you'll see what we have. So WSS is, you know, 2003 for those who are SharePoint administrators. We're going to start introducing pilots. This is pretty much where we're at right now, all of Office 365. So, and to think about that, I want to, this is not Office 365 discussion, but I want to get something very clear to people because I think I had a question over here about it. Office 365 in its entirety is not a product SKU. If any Microsoft people already know this, that you go and buy off the shelf. It is a collection of modules, collections of different things that make up Office 365. What that meant for us immediately is SharePoint, an Exchange Online. So you gotta look at that. So you look at Office 365, it's not just one thing, it's actually a collection of things. And how we're introducing it is based on the workflows we wanna move to the cloud or workflows we wanna be hybrid. And as we keep moving down the hybrid model into 2017, 18, 19, we'll introduce more. So it'll be Exchange, it'll be Office 2016 or Office Pro Plus. And then finally, we're looking at the big migration. So we're looking at, we're currently at Dropbox, and by the time we get to the state where we want to start collapsing even our file management, will Dropbox go away? We don't know that. I don't know the answer to that question. I don't want to predict it, because OneDrive is going to mature, Dropbox is going to mature. So as you look at your different components in your suite, just be aware that you don't have to go all in with Microsoft. And no one, Microsoft, throw a tomato at me now, but you don't have to go all in with Microsoft. Take your time, figure out your workflows, and go at your pace, not what you think you should be doing. Go at the pace your business needs you to go at.
And one quick thing I want to point out. Yes. I'm sure a lot of you notice, like, this is broken down in phases, right?
Right.
The traditional IT thinking is it's a big bang approach.
Right.
We'll do it 5 years later. Here you go. That doesn't work anymore. The key point here and the name of the game is you got to show value right away to the business.
Absolutely.
And with new technologies in the cloud and hybrid, you're able to do that. Well, again, as IT, right, we get excited. Ooh, I want to turn on Planner. I want to turn on BI. I want to do all these things. AI, bots, run DMC. Right. I had to try.
Was someone paying attention?
I'm trying not to be a stand-up here. But it's this iterative approach, because you'll learn through these different phases, and stuff may change down the road.
Absolutely.
But this is one key point you have to think about. Quick wins, get started, drop something that provides value.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the second step. So one of the things that, as working with Charles and the team is, you know, once they have their roadmap together, certainly it's, you know, a lot went to it. How long did it take you for your team to put this roadmap together, by the way?
A while.
Yeah.
It took a while.
It was a formal, about a year exercise, right?
Yeah.
But again, I'm not saying it's going to take a year, but that points out that they took it seriously. They want to, you know, do it right, invest right, and do everything. So the second step, once the roadmap is there, we're ready to go. The next area, when we start talking about technology, we start looking into how do we ensure platform governance and be able to scale that. Not just short-term thinking, right? I mean, again, a lot of you have already seen and heard and attended sessions around SharePoint governance. We'll touch that a little bit. But you got to be practical. You know, one of the things that I find in organizations, when I ask, so do you have governance around SharePoint infrastructure? Everybody would say yes, no doubt. But you know what? I call them out. No, you don't. What you do have is you went to the Microsoft website, downloaded a governance template, filled in the blanks, emailed all over the place, and had people sign it. We've got governance.
Remember what I said, governance is not a policy. It is not a thing.
So when you think about governance, it's really, think about it from a perspective of a control and container perspective, right? So take these three steps, if you may, or these three considerations. First, when we think about governance, what we want to do is build some kind of control into containers. So, Dux, what does that mean? When we think about controls, how do we protect specific areas where our assets, like data, will go into? And I'll show you examples in a second. Next, a part of your governance is make sure no one messes with your controls. How many times have you set up some kind of governance and define that, okay, if you create a project or collaboration site, make sure you don't use SharePoint Designer, right? Nobody uses SharePoint Designer, do they? No. And then lastly, ensure that the system is being used as intended. How many of you have users, for some reason, would create a site to store files and another site to store another file. They have that file share mentality, you know. I don't know why, but I find a lot of people have this unexplainable level of satisfaction, fulfillment, expanding, contracting folders. The deeper, the better, yeah? But they're using SharePoint for that. So how do we think about building controls into container, make sure nobody messes with it, and make sure it's being used as intended? So here's an example of, sorry, Charles, I left the word policies here. But let's say a project site. A project site is a container. It'll contain project information, right? But what are the controls we're going to put in? So what are the controls around site configuration? Well, if people request for a project site, we're going to ask them questions. Do we want to enable external sharing? As some of you are using Office 365, it's there, right? Do you want to turn that on? What about classification of content? If this is a highly compliant type of project, and I need to classify, especially if you're working DoD, secret, top secret, confidential, Yahweh. So the right information have to be in the right place. And then what about data sovereignty? As Charles mentioned, this is becoming a pressing issue. A lot of you are global organizations, but there are rules in certain countries. That's why Microsoft, as in the keynote yesterday, are opening these new data centers around the world for data sovereignty reasons, right? Anybody familiar with the new European, essentially, I guess it's a law called GDPR? General Data Protection Regulation?
If you're a global company, you better get...
Now, you might be thinking, I don't care, docs, I'm an American... No, you should care. Now, let me give you a Cliff Notes version of what this thing is. It's in full effect. It essentially means if you're an organization that you have European citizen data in your environment, and if you get audited and they find that you don't have ways and means to control or protect European citizen data in your environment, or if you get a breach, you can get fined up to 4% of your company's gross revenue. Even if you're an American company, but for some reason you have European citizen PII information, you're bounded by that law. Right? So think about that. And then lastly, ownership. Who is the chokeable neck? And we deal with that all the time. Oh, the site admin leaves. There's this new site owner, and they start changing permissions. So how do we enforce all that? So their ultimate goal, and I'm sure a lot of you are thinking about this, is hybrid platform is the ultimate goal. And when I say hybrid, I'm not just talking about on-prem SharePoint, Office 365. You know, Charles mentioned, they have Dropbox, they have file shares, they have other systems. And that's really hybrid in its full form, right? And Charles and his team are only so much. How can they effectively ensure that while the governance framework is there, but they can't enforce it all day long, right? Because of how the landscape is, it requires delegating and trusting other people to follow the rules. And we know the rest of that story, right? The problem is not coming up with governance. The problem is enforcement. Everybody with me? And friends, the problem and the challenge that I see today is every time if your users mess up, what do? Oh, we got a governance document. Go look at it. Nobody looks at it. I mean, let me ask you this. For the Americans here, how many of you have read the Constitution? Raise your hand. Public shaming time, right? or how many haven't read the Constitution page to page? I have not. And I'm ashamed of that. Now, why have you not read it, Hannah?
No need.
I know it's there. I know there's a Second Amendment. Maybe if I get sued, I'll read it. Same with her. So nobody cares about your freaking governance document. But it's important. It keeps the check and balances of this country, right? Imagine if our forefathers went to a website called constitution.gov and downloaded a template. This country would be like SharePoint. But here's the thing, though. What's important? How come I do know the governance around stoplights? If it's red, I stop. If it's yellow, I slow down. Green, I go. How come I know the governance around where to park and not to park when they're cleaning the streets? How come I know the governance if I'm home in D.C. at 10 o'clock at night, I should be home or else I'll get in trouble with upper management, my wife? There's an immediate consequence that's clear to me. It's not clear to the user. But docs, wait. Are you saying we're going to go around and say, here's the consequence? No, that's not what I'm saying. But us as the architects of governance, we should understand what these consequences would be. Now, we don't want to get there, right? What we want to do is if we can make this non-transparent. What if you can make governance just happen behind the scenes? Users don't even have to know. We just put the, you know, like when you go to bowling, and I hate to admit this, I still have my rail guards on.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's just there, so I can score some points. What if you can do that? So when you think about ensuring platform governance, the first area that's very important is you gotta automate your infrastructure governance, AKA SharePoint. So for example, like Charles, today, in your new world, and by the way, we'll show some screenshots of their environment in a second. How does this look like if I want to request for a SharePoint site? I mean, let's compare and contrast.
Sure.
In the past, typical model, and then today, how does that look like?
In the past, typical model, you had two different ways. You could call the SharePoint administrator, as you know, he's right there, or you could put a ticket in and maybe you'll get it completed in 48 hours, a lot more like 3 days, just because of the volume of sites we had. In contrast to today, you go to our SharePoint solution site and you click a button, answer some questions, and it spits out in a couple of minutes.
Yep, and this is important, right? You know, when we work with the team in Amitabh, that was his role in the past. And today, is he still working?
He's here, he should be.
That's right. So, but he's inundated with just getting all these requests. Oh, I gotta create this site template, But then if you're able to automate it, but not just for the sake of provisioning, here's the important part, right? So as Charles is describing, you fill out a form, hey, I need a project site, I'm working on a $10 million project, I have external people. Based on those, the system would take what your governance rules are around that and then provision it. And if the manager needs to approve it, the manager needs to approve it without IT touching it. Once the site is created, here's the other issue we find. You know, docs, our people are pretty good with following rules when sites are created. My problem is now when they're site owners, they have this power trip going on. Oh, I got full control. Buy me a beer, I'll give you full control. I'll create 10 subsites for you. Never happens, right? And then it's our problem. So you can proactively enforce these rules as well. Well, you know what? For all the HR people, when they create sites, even though they're site owners, they can never change permission. They can never create subsites. Oh, this one has to deal with Sarbanes-Oxley. Guess what? We're going to put all the classification stuff in there and make sure once the project is done, we're going to make it read-only. So when we get audited, they're not going to say we change financial data. So full lifecycle management. And the other key area that's very important, especially a lot of you, similar to Charles's organization, who's going to offer SharePoint as a service, you got to be able to show back to the business consumption. I know Microsoft's big thing is consumption, but we're kind of the same thing. If we're the providers of SharePoint, the typical model today is so hard to tell, did the project management team use more of SharePoint versus the HR team versus, you know, come budget time?
Right.
But with this, you're able to not only provide automation around infrastructure governance, but be able to describe the type of ROI, chargeback model, all that stuff. Anybody are thinking about this, chargeback models across your organization? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anything else you want to add?
We haven't fixed the chargeback model, but we're just exploring it too. So.
Yeah, okay. But that's part of the conversations
we had
early on.
Yeah. Right? Or showback.
Absolutely.
Usually that's where we started, right? Showback, yeah.
So that's the first area. If you can automate infrastructure governance, beautiful. The second area, so we talk about infrastructure, which is your container, which is SharePoint in this case, is what if you can automate data governance? How many times have you told user, please tag your content? They don't do it. How many times you tell users, please do not put social security number or a document with PII into this public shared documents library? They still do it. But what if, you know what, let's just make it easy for you. Even if you don't do it, we'll do it for you. So how can we make it easy for users to do the right thing? So here's an example, classic example. Friday, 5 o'clock, Joe needs to upload his daily documents into SharePoint, or even OneDrive, for that matter. He doesn't have time to tag documents because it's 5 o'clock and wants to go home. But company policy around information management says that everything that goes into SharePoint must be tagged, and any restricted information must not be shared with everyone. So what happens here? So earlier in the infrastructure management or infrastructure governance, we talked about that. We have a technology called governance automation. And what you're seeing here is our technology called Compliance Guardian, where we can put this policy, and this is important, it works both on-prem and in the cloud. The beauty with Office 365, as you know, Microsoft has invested a lot around data governance and compliance, which is great. But if you're in a hybrid environment and you're still in 2013 on-prem, for example, there's really nothing there today. So the beauty of this is not only can you do it on-prem, you could do it in a hybrid or also apply it to your cloud infrastructure. So we put that rules in there, and Joe is about to upload his document. So notice at the bottom is his Windows Explorer. To the left is a public document library. Now, so he uploads it, and friends, let's see what happens. So as soon as he uploads it, he then put the right tagging. To the far right, notice there's a column called security classification. Upon upload, the system looked at the document, scoured inside the document, not just the metadata, not just the file name and metadata, actually looked at the content, and based on the rules, put the right tag. Top secret, public, private, confidential. Now the last one, by the way, this happens in a split second, it noticed that inside this file, it has people's payroll information. Now, the file name is called payroll, but the actual content has payroll. So what did it do? Based on the policy, we can't put it here. It's a public library. Let's quarantine it to a restricted, secured folder or library. Only a couple people can see. Let's alert HR. Let's alert the boss. Let's alert Joe and say, this is the third time you've done it. No soup for you. Right?
Does it automatically fire him, too?
Well...
third time.
Depends on what country, right?
That's true.
Now, so we can enforce data governance. I'm sure a lot of you are thinking about this, but at the end of the day, if you make it as easy for them, make it as non-transparent, no, you tell them this happens, but it saves you in the end. So active and automated enforcement ensures success, right? Across platforms. Anything you want to add?
I think the important thing about what Doug's saying, and it helps at least MVC is going to help us in our journey, is having these non-transparent or transparent data governance tools in place or mechanisms in place, it allows for the culture of your business to change and evolve itself. So you can almost do self-policing at one point. So Joe knows, he'll know not to do that. Or Joe will tell someone else that maybe it slipped through for some reason. Joe say, hey, you shouldn't be sending me this. So it's not just the tool you put in place. As much as we are a tool and technologists, it's a culture shift that your company, my company, it has to get to. And having mechanisms that reinforce that culture, that governance policy, will be very beneficial. So I would say the app point and even Office 365, the stuff that's built in, having that and turning that on, making it show versus charge back, just making them aware will help change your culture, yeah. which is doing for us.
So the third step. So we talked about four steps as what NBC Universal went through. First, establish your collaboration roadmap. Second is ensure platform governance. And third, once the platform governance is set, you know, it's ready to go, how do we start moving stuff, right? How do we facilitate compliant migration? Do you guys watch that show, Hoarders? It's so bad that it's so good you get stuck. It's kind of like Sharknado, you know? I saw Sharknado earlier. That was your show.
Yeah, right? It's our show.
What about Hoarders? Is that your show?
I think so. I think it is.
This is our world, right? And we're always thinking about, I don't know how to deal with this. Let's just do this. Let's just lift and shift. Let's pack everything in the box. And once we get to our new house, Office 365, we will diligently organize it, create a nice site collection, put the right stuff in the right library. Does it happen? No. I mean, my wife still gives me a hard time. In our house, it's already 8 years old. I have boxes I have not opened. Because when we were moving, she kept telling me, you know, throw what you don't need. You know, just bring what you need. I'm like, let's just move everything, and I'll organize it when we move. Eight years later, it's still there.
Doug, isn't around your wife's data governance in your house?
That's right. Yeah. She's the compliance officer. Anyway, so how do you think about migration, right? Now, don't get me wrong. If you're moving a couple of files, no big deal, go for it, right? Obviously, there's a lot of great solutions Microsoft provides. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with Fast Track. That's a great program. There's a lot of great technologies out there you can leverage. You could do content attach, reattach if you're on-prem. But at the end of the day, what if you're not just only moving SharePoint? What if you're moving FileShare? What if you're moving Lotus Notes? Anybody have Lotus Notes still? Bless your heart.
Bless your heart.
E-rooms, right? Because that's a great promise of Office 365, but how do I get there? I talked to a lot of companies. I've got it, but I don't know how to get there. So I'm going to share this very pragmatic approach. I'll go through it one by one. So at that point, you know, obviously some of you are familiar, we have technologies, but we also have this great practice around compliant migration where the process starts with discovery, right? So what do we mean by discovery? So first and foremost, the way we work with organizations such as NBC Universal, certainly we use our tools, we have our migration experts, we look at what do you want to move, Charles? So Charles kind of showed earlier, at least how many environments did we move for that first wave?
The first wave, it was two environments, but there were like 50 different site collections which had a bunch of sub-sites.
Yeah, there was WSS, 2007, yeah, it's across the board for different entities, right? Right. So we looked at what the source is. And then we did an analysis, I'll show you what the analysis looked like, an example for that matter, is understanding, other than the data, are there customizations?
Right.
Right. What's the complexity? Anybody mess around with your master pages, content pages? Mm-hmm. Well, that's in the 12 hive. How do you deal with that? Right. Or 14 hive, whatever. And then what about workflows? InfoPath in the house, right? A lot of you are thinking, how do I move that stuff? So it's not just content. And once you have that, it's key that you have some kind of information gathering and understand, okay, what do I need to keep? What do I need to move? What is it going to cost? What's important? All that good stuff. So how do I get my head around that, Docs? I get it. I understand what you're saying. But let me show you an example to kind of keep it real, right? So here's a sample report. And this is something similar when we work with Charles and other organizations is when we do this discovery, we go back to the customer and we show them this is what you have. And we use Power BI because visually you can easily see it. So I'm just going to run through a couple of scenarios here. So for example, here what we're looking at is what we, for example, a site density, right? So we scan the sources. And if I want to start seeing, okay, when show me sites where they have content last modified 2012. You see that? Show me all documents 2012. And we get some sense of what we have, what we don't have. The other, you know, I'm just going to highlight some examples here. Let me look at all the libraries. Give me a library that has the last item modified date 2011. Oh, nothing. 2012, perhaps. No, that's good. 2015. There you go. But notice how powerful this is, just understanding and doing inventory of what you have. Is this helpful for some of you? Because now you can go back to the business. Hey, business, this is 1992. I don't even know how you did that. SharePoint never existed in 1992. But there's a file in that library. We don't need that anymore. Or maybe if you do want to keep it, let's archive it somewhere. Let's not migrate it to the new environment. Y'all with me? Yeah.
That's exactly the power we had. We used that exact scenario is, hey, business, or what was it, Amitad? It was, I think it was our, actually our BI team. Hey, you guys haven't touched these files in 7 years. Do you need them? What files? What site? That's what we got. What are you talking about? Like, you have a site here, totally orphaned. They didn't even realize it.
Yeah, and you can do it now. Show me orphan sites. I'm sure you get that, where people create sites with nothing on it, right?
Yeah, that's the other one, yeah.
And what the beautiful thing is, every time we start this exercise, oh, Ducks, you don't understand. We have 80 terabytes of data we need to move.
Right. No, you don't.
79.5 is junk, right? Now migration is much shorter. So, and then we start assessing. This is where working the business, categorizing, and this is the part that's critical. Doing customization inventory. Again, we think about migration as data, but in some organizations, I know some of you do this, you build custom apps on top of SharePoint. Now you have to do rationalization, right? Well, this won't move. let's see if there's a new feature in Office 365 that can support that or tweak that. Or if it's really important, then how do we think about refactoring it? What's the cost? What's the timeline? So you start doing all those decision points. And you haven't even migrated yet, right? Next is you want to do your pilot migration. So you want to test. So you take a subset of data. Now, it depends on your organization. Some organization, they take a sample of what they think is the most complex. And some have a mix, easy, complex sides and all that. And then we start doing a pilot migration. And why this is important, we need to understand the throughput model. How fast, how slow, what's the choking point? For example, are you guys familiar with the throttling limit of Office 365? If you're not familiar with that, if you move stuff to Office 365, no matter how fast your pipe is, there's a 16 gig limit a day. It's a Microsoft thing. Well, docs, that can't be. We had a customer, they had 8 terabytes of data. By court order, they have to move it in 4 weeks for legal reason. Two companies are divesting from each other. We did it in 3 for them. So there's other ways to do it. So we would put those types of recommendation, and we're not able to find that out until we do some kind of pilot through throughput modeling. And then we do, based on what we learned from the pilot, we did the full execution. And again, this is still phase-based, depending on what you want to do. And in some organizations, what we can actually do is, on the fly, as the content is being moved, we're scanning for PII and putting the tags. So imagine there's like a filter, if you may. That's what we call compliant migration. As data is being moved, it's checking all the data and say, oh, this is not tagged. We're going to tag it. We're going to put it here. Let's tag that, put that there. And that's huge, because as you move to your new environment, all the right content are going to be in the right place. Permissions are set, all that good stuff. Any thoughts on the migration experience that you guys went through?
It was painful in the beginning. I know you want to hear that. But that's not because of what they gave to us. It's because of what we thought we knew about our environment. We thought, I only have 15 terabytes, and it all needs to be moved, and it wasn't that way. Or we don't have any complex customizations, and found out like, oh yeah, we do. And there were some key systems, I think, news or whoever we're looking at, very complex. So just be prepared. That pilot is so important, because it weeds out and gives you expectations of what your rest of your migration is going to look like.
And we had to kind of change up the strategy for the full migration.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's totally fine.
And then once you're there, obviously there's a once you do your full migration, there's always going to be incremental remediation in the end, because most likely the environment's still in production as you move stuff, right? People may still be using it. So we'll do an incremental in the end and then do a cutover, maybe read-only. You would still have to support your users too and ensure when they go to the new environment, which we'll talk about next topic, is how do you ensure you can drive sustainable adoption?
Right.
So that was step 3, right? So from an approach perspective, you know, Charles and team put together this roadmap. We ensured that moving forward, we're going to put governance on the platform, both on the infrastructure and data. And then as we move it, we want to be pragmatic, right? What's a compliant way of migrating content? And it's not a one-time thing. I mean, there's going to be more stuff that needs to be moved. And then this is the most important part, and I'll have Charles kind of talk about this. How do we make sure we drive sustainable adoption?
Now, and even though it's step number 4, it actually is something to be considered all throughout. For those of you who raised your hand and said you're decision makers, this is where it comes to you. You are responsible for ensuring sustainable adoption. Because if executive management, whether you're executive management or you report to executive management, if they don't have buy-in, this does not work. And if you notice so far this entire time, that mostly, I mean, I know Dux is a tools guy, but mostly we haven't really talked about the tool itself in its entirety. We talked about compliance, governance, the thought processes to go through, your support models now. We talked about your executive management support. These things are important to have up front, because as an administrator, as a technologist, you're going to come to executive management and say, hey, I need X amount of dollars to go do this governance, to do this really cool stuff. And they're going to say, why? They're going to say, yeah, okay, whatever. We'll get back to me. You're lower on the budget cycle this time. So it's important to understand the business values and get their buy-in, because I guarantee you, if you try to do this, you'll be 6 months and it'll stop. Because if someone in management will look up and say, wait, why are we spending money over here? What is this? And then it'll get killed. As far as the change, and Dux actually pointed this out to me, is like changing how we do business, changing how we manage information, changing how we store documents. Change is not good. I mean, not it's good, but it's not easy for folks. 53% of people will reject or resist this, change.
This is an actual IDC research. IDC. Any new technology that, and it doesn't matter how good or how bad a job you do, there's a 53% decline in productivity for, I believe, the first 2-3 weeks, people learning and all that. Now, the question becomes is, you want to make sure it's worth it, right? The last thing you want, you roll out this nice, shiny Office 365 hybrid, and 2 weeks later, you know what, it's too hard, let me go back to email.
Right. No. Yeah. So, yeah, who's experienced that? Who's rolled out something and people struggle, right? It's difficult, and we're going through that ourselves. It's a matter of, again, that culture is, don't give up on it. If it's a good, you've done the work, the four or three steps ahead, it'll work. But you got to keep practicing at it and keep going at it. The other thing is establish a relevant information architecture. So it's not just, here's a bunch of sites, let's put everything together and you have one big blob, one big mess. It's understanding, like we talked about before, this is L4 for us. L4 is like the most critical classified information. Where does that stuff go? What does records management or invoices go as far as business engagement? What is just files or pictures about someone's kitten? Where does that go? So understanding where does information go and understanding who's going to do it. Because in reality is that you can't scale your SharePoint team fast enough to keep up with the growth of information. So there's no such thing as, well, I'm going to have 20 different SharePoint administrators to support my organization, my enterprise, global enterprise organization. What you need is to understand who has what rights and where within your construct of information architecture and find out from them what they actually need to do their job well. Again, going back to the business enablement. And frankly, once you establish this, and we're working through this ourselves, this is kind of like our model, but not exactly. But once you do that, you kind of get out of their way. And that's what they want. They want you to deliver something to them, get out of their way. They need help, then they'll call you. And that releases your administrators, your developers, your architects to actually do the stuff that you want them doing, which is that next evolution. Where is SharePoint 2016 going to be? And if your SharePoint developer or madman is focusing on day-to-day tickets and service requests, he can't do that. So very important for us to establish IA first and get executive buy-in. So one other thing we talked about, and we kind of talked about this before, and Dux can jump in here on some of these, is understanding the typical business challenges is critical to establishing any technology. It's not just SharePoint, it's anything. So why are you doing it? Right? Why are you creating this tool? Why are you investing in a solution? What are you doing? What business problem are you trying to solve? And I'm sure we've heard this. I'm sure executive management asked you that. I bet you your CFO has asked that question, or VP of finance. Why are you doing this? So it's important that as for us, when we were building our SharePoint environments, we talk to users, not to IT, not to app owners. We actually talk to the users who actually create in the data lifecycle workflow, the first person. They're the origin of the data. What are you trying to do?
So for example, right, one of the exercises that not only Charles and team went through, and we do this with other organizations, is, you know, the way we look at a collaboration platform, first of all, is not an intranet. You know, a lot of us go around and say, oh, we're going to have a nice intranet in Office 365. If that's your pitch with SharePoint, shame on you. You shouldn't even talk about that. That's a given. The idea with SharePoint is, how can we help our business get their jobs done faster, easier, and better? The intranet pitch is okay, but that's so 2001. That's already a given, right? So the way you work with your business is understand based on what they're doing. So for example, let me pick HR. I know we talked about this. Mm-hmm. So in your HR, when they're doing contracts, for example, think about movie stars, right? They have contracts or movie scripts. Can we make the team be more efficient in sending those contracts out securely and make sure that it's not just being emailed back and forth as an attachment?
Yeah, because what will happen is they're going to hack into the system or feed and get Brad Pitt's address. I mean, most people, some of the women might want that, but we as a company would want that.
He's available now, right?
It is available now.
Okay. Go ahead. and then even your, like the other business units, so from the parks to the news and the studios, they have fascinating use cases.
Yeah, news has one that I know of, and I kind of talked to some of their IT executive management about this, is they're worried about, and I'll make it really simple, that the guy, and he literally said, they're sitting in Turkey at an internet cafe, he needs to share files, he needs to upload what's going on, whatever story he's working on. He needs to do that quickly because he's maybe getting yelled at or, you know, getting shot at. It depends on what country he's in. And they've built applications on top of SharePoint to order to facilitate the gathering of information. And it's really cool. So if that app goes down as an app, SharePoint is also part of that app. So they don't have time to call a help desk and say, hey, I think I got a problem. They need immediate action. So the reliability and flexibility of SharePoint hybrid model is critically important to like a news organization.
Yep. All right.
Okay, so here's an example of, yes, our SharePoint intranet. No, I'm kidding. This is not SharePoint intranet. This is actually our SharePoint solutions page. So this is what users see. Instead of calling up our help desk or calling up the guy they know they can build their sites, they go to our SharePoint solutions page and they click on create, or get started creating a site. And it asks about 6 or 7 questions that give the system an idea of what kind of site, what kind of data, and where it should be placed, and what kind of retention policies you should have on it, the lease rate, whether or not it's going to be last for a year or 18 months or maybe just 6 months. And, okay, you moved it?
Yeah,
okay.
I was going to say, so.
Yeah, go ahead.
Remember earlier when I was describing automation of infrastructure governance? Right. This is it. So to the user, it's transparent, right? They go here. And by the way, it doesn't even have to be SharePoint. We had some customers, when they do their request, it's on ServiceNow. Anybody using ServiceNow? Or Remedy, because they go there for everything else. Makes sense, right? So similar exercise, they can go to ServiceNow or even this SharePoint solution site, and depending on who they are, they'll see what they're supposed to see and not see what they're not supposed to see. So let's say in this scenario, I want to create a site, and the next screen it'll show, okay, what kind of sites? Do you need compliance on this? Do you have external users? It's right. Just very straightforward question.
Yes.
And then once it gets created, if it's what we call not a low high impact site,
right.
Well, we don't need approval, it just creates it, right? But then we still have those policies being enforced. We're not going to let them change permissions, they're not create subsites and all that.
And this is an example of a simple team sharing, team collaboration site. This is templated so that we try to make it more like Facebook, like we want to give people, users, hey, if you just need to have a team collaboration site, then here it is. Here's a couple of variations of it. So this is an example. So you see, we've got the calendar. We can share some issues. This is actually a project site. We've got the site card that actually was really good. It shows you who the primary owner is. That was critical for our migration, is grabbing a site and finding out who exactly owns it.
And this is important, this site information. So it has a couple of information. I mean, since this is a screenshot, we can't tap through it. But it constantly reminds the user on this site who their contact, secondary, and all that. But then if they click on the next tab, it will provide a description what the site is for. It will say, this site is for a project, highly compliant, you have 50 gigs, you can't change permission, it's in their face, it reminds them. And then there's the next tab is if they do want to do something else in the site. For example, hey, can I add a user? Let's say for some reason you hired a vendor or a contractor and they need access, external sharing, y'all with me? Or hey, can I create an office groups? Everybody from an office groups? So this works with it where an office group will be provisioned and can be tied to the site. And from an IT perspective, they can have a single pane of glass and watch what's going on, what was created, who touched what. They can change it, they can revoke it, all that.
So in the past, the way this would work is we'd have to give someone elevated rights so that they can add users. And having a user have elevated rights is, for those who are SharePoint administrators, is disastrous. We've had our farm be taken down because someone installed an app, someone did something ridiculous, not in here, right? But so we're able to give them what they need to do, which is add users, but we don't have to give them elevated rights to do that. So they can do those self-service services within their site. That is very critical to, at least for our sites that we create.
Go ahead. No, it's an AppPoint tool. It's part of our governance automation technology. No, it's bolt-on on top of it.
Yeah.
So, but once you have our governance automation platform, it shows up as a web part. Yeah. And for sites that, again, depends on your governance, you can choose for sites to have it or not have it, but that's really a good little, you know, checklist for the user, if you may. Yeah.
I think actually, just fast forward, so we're at the end, but again, yeah. I just want to go back to the point I want to make, the 3 points I want to make is, definitely get your executive management on board with your strategic plan. which, by the way, means you need to have a strategic plan and understanding where you want to go from a governance perspective and where you want to go from a data management perspective, and understanding what your capabilities are for the future. Meaning, do you want to do team collaboration? Do you want to do advanced analytics on your data sites? So having that road mapped out first for your executive leadership to basically look at and read and understand is very critically important. And then work with partners, Microsoft or AppPoint, that actually enable that. Again, they're enabling you to enable the business.
And that's another key point. Like, I've worked with a lot of organizations. Oh, no, we're SharePoint people. We could do this. We'll code it. We'll PowerShell it, right? But the reality is, this is not your core business.
Right.
NBC Universal, your core business is media. Entertainment, and you got to keep the lights up.
Right.
But by having this collaborative partnership, right, mm-hmm. we're able to support your mission and also enabling you to support the overall business strategy.
Agreed.
Questions? Yes, sir. What's that? Say, what was the question? Is there media?
Yeah, are you storing multiple, videos? And
that's a great question. So the question is, are there media stored? So, Charles.
So we do have some sites that store media. Not a lot of it because of the restrictions, the storage restrictions. And as you start getting the 4K, 8K videos, SharePoint has its own restrictions. So we're actually exploring an option with AppPoint where they can use SharePoint
Office
Connect.
365 videos and Azure.
Yeah, in
to
order
store.
To attach. So you go into SharePoint, but it's use the other backend systems to actually expose it. So you don't get the restrictions from video.
And that's a cool thing with Office 365 videos, Microsoft Stream. Azure Media Streaming has a whole storage capability of these types of content. I mean, the Olympics was streamed in Azure, and all the on-demand videos in the Olympics on the NBC site is sitting in Azure. So we're using those technologies to augment even their on-prem. And to the user, they don't even know.
Don't
to
know.
Them, it's just the same thing. Yeah. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah. What about pictures?
What's that?
Pictures? Yeah. I don't think we have a problem storing pictures. Usually that's okay. It's the video that.
Yeah. And the beauty, so one quick thing, in case you don't know, Azure, a lot of you, hopefully you took Azure sessions, but Azure Media Streaming is phenomenal because not only can you store video, you can run auto transcription on it through machine learning. So it'll spit out transcription. So when you do a search, SharePoint, it's not just going to search the metadata of the video. It actually pulls up what, it'll say 10 minutes, 11 seconds, the word SharePoint was said. That's pretty sick, right? Yeah.
I'm pretty impressed with this. The thing is, how you talked about somebody, Joe or somebody was generating data, and he uploaded some documents, and the system was automatically able to classify the top secret.
Sure.
And then send emails to
the other saying
that. 100%. Now, how is that being done? I mean, do you run other software?
Yeah, it's called Compliance Guardian. So it's our technology that supports SharePoint and Office 365, and you can even look at Box or Dropbox or what have you.
So you build rules on that using your tool.
Exactly right. Yeah. And you can even run rules against FileShare. Yeah.
Let's go right here.
Do your tools sit on-prem?
Both. It doesn't matter. On-prem, fully hybrid, stick it in Azure. So we support any type of model.
Are you able to put any of your tools on Office 365? 100%.
Yeah.
You can put them on Office 365. 100%. Are they add-ins or are they web parts?
No, they're SaaS-based, so I could talk to you on the side. It's called AppPoint Online Services. The beauty of our technology, it'll support your journey. If you start on-prem like them, good. If you're straight up Office 365, you could do it. If you're hybrid, we can watch both, and you have a single pane of glass.
So he's got a tenant in Office 365 and on-prem, and you intercept?
So our tools for NBC Universal sits on-prem, but it watches their entire environment. Doesn't matter. And to the user, so when a user requests, the user doesn't even have to know where the environment is. So if you request a site that requires external people, that project site could be an Office 365 site.
What's the name of the tool
again? We have Governance Automation, DocAv, and Compliance Guardian. So come by the booth, and then we'll show you all this stuff. Yeah.
Right here.
I got a question. When you're in your implementation of a hybrid mentality with on-prem and hybrid SharePoint Online environment, and you're talking about Germany and data restriction laws for countries, how do you go around that? Because we're in a similar situation. We have North American, European, and APAC, right? We have one domain, one DFS federation to the cloud.
Yep.
Right? So at that point, how do I get data localization laws to play nice? Because right now, in Germany, we can't put up anything on our tenant because our tenant is based in the U.S.
Sure.
You don't go around it. You
So there's yeah. No. So we have a technology that could do geofencing. So what we can say is, okay, this content I'm going to share, but it can only be shared in this long lat within how many radius? And it's looking at a lot of different things, you know, GPS, IP, and all that. But we can geofence the data based on regions, and we can also look at data centers.
So a follow-up to that is, at that point, if I have three different regions, I'm going to have three different on-prem farms with our tenants being housed out of the U.S., right? So if anything can go in the U.S., it'll go cloud-based. But everything going from, let's say, EMEA or APAC will have to remain on the on-prem farm.
Yep.
And that's controlled by magic in the background?
Yeah, so we could do replication processes and... But I could talk to you offline. Yeah. There's ways
it's
I can
the magic you want to hear about. Yeah.
Right. Doesn't matter. Nope.
They
don't have to care, right? So.
But I care.
No, you do care. No, that's our job, right? But the user, you ask them for the business use.
Yeah.
You don't ask them, where do you want your SharePoint site?
Right.
What are you trying to do? Oh, I'm creating a project site, or I'm creating this team collab site. Based on their input in the form, there's rules in the background. Stick in this web app, stick in this site collection. But to the user, you just get a site.
And the other thing, as far as IA, it's also is for us, it was the naming convention. Because we got some crazy naming that 256 get. We actually ran a couple of sites that they ran out because they're too long. So it's not just a, here's a robot site. And what we did as our practice, here's a robot site and go away. We don't want to talk to you anymore. It's we actually had a, I have two staff that help the users. But it's a very quick conversation is, okay, what are you trying to do?
Yeah.
What are you trying to do? What do you want to name it? Oh, we can't name it that. Let's negotiate. So it helps that business relationship management guy do that.
And then through time, right?
Yeah. You have to have a conversation.
Have to have
well, this is Gen 1 for us, so we figured Gen 2 would be more like, okay, now we built a culture where they know, oh, I just go to this site.
Yeah.
We take feedback, say, okay, Ducks team with the SharePoint team, okay, users are saying they want these things that we don't have yet. Build that into the site now. Right.
We'll take Nick Nunn, yeah.
I haven't met him yet.
You met him.
Right here.
One more quick plug, Dr. So up there, that one where you were doing the analysis.
Sure.
Was that part of one or two assumptions?
Yep. So you're talking about the migration analysis?
RBI.
Yeah. So let me explain this. Our tool grabs all the data, but this is service we provide. So you don't have to buy our tool. If you want us to help you with migration, we'll give you and slice and dice, but we use your Power BI tenant to show it. So, but all the data came from our tool. Yeah. Last question, sir.
Yeah, this is for a merger situation.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
Right. So he's asking about, just for those who over there maybe can hear, as far as merging M&As with your business with another business, how you create the basically the IA. We have to actually work undergoing that literally right now with a company you guys have probably heard of.
But we work a couple of companies around that, and I'll talk to you once we're done. But listen, what do you think of this session? Helpful? Yeah, okay.
Yes.
So all this will be available. It's recorded. And what I'll do, if you stop by the booth and they'll scan you, we have a lot of resources that we just don't have enough time, from checklists to guidance and templates and whatnot. We want to share that with you. For some reason, on the Ignite portal, all we can upload is a PowerPoint.
Right.
So if you're keen on that, just come by the AppPoint booth, scan it, we'll send it to you. Make sure you throw in your evaluation. But other than that, thank you for coming. Hopefully this was worthwhile. Enjoy the rest of the conference, all right?
Yep.
And we'll stay here for questions. Yeah.
Yep.